If you have your Bibles with you, I invite you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 17. We're coming back. This is the second week of a series through the summer on Have You Seen the Power of God Lately? In chapter 17, we were introduced to this man, Elijah. If this were a play, we could divide this chapter into five distinct scenes. Scene 1 and 2 we looked at last week. Talked about Elijah's confrontation with Ahab and then Elijah at the brook Cherith. This morning, we're going to continue on with three more scenes. Scene 3, 4, and 5, Elijah leaves Cherith, the widow of Zarephath, and then Elijah and the widow's son. So that's sort of the outline for this passage. Woven throughout these five scenes of chapter 17 is what I believe is the foundation for Elijah's future ministry. Perhaps the ultimate reason why God was able to so powerfully use Elijah and Elijah's ministry is that he learned a very simple but incredibly vital and important lesson that I think is explained here in this chapter, and that is the lesson that you can trust God. You can trust God. Genuine trust is a pretty scarce commodity right now. I mean, just in general, in our world, we tend not to trust people for a whole bunch of reasons. But if for a lot of people, even more personally, more specifically, if you've ever been cheated, if you've ever been hurt, if you've ever been taken advantage of, if you've ever been abandoned in some way, I mean, this stuff goes down deep and affects our whole view of life. It's very natural if we've experienced some of those things, and almost everybody has to some extent, but it's very natural then to kind of have trust issues. And we ask questions like, who can I trust? I don't know who I can trust. So this morning, if I'm talking your language, if I'm talking to you when we discuss trust and these questions that we have about who can I trust, God's got something for you this morning, and he's going to say it through the life of this man, Elijah. Here's a guy who didn't have anybody to trust, at least not in this situation, as we're introduced to him in chapter 17. We're picking up where we left off last week. If you weren't with us, we were introduced to this guy named Elijah, kind of a very rough, backcountry, desert dweller that walks up on the most powerful and ruthless ruler maybe in all of the Bible, King Ahab, and he sticks his finger figuratively in the face. He might have done it literally, but he sticks his finger in the face of Ahab, and he says, it's not going to rain for a period of years until I say it's going to rain again. I mean, he's just right up in Ahab's face. You'll have to listen to last week, but you talk about a dire economic prediction. I mean, this was spelling doom and disaster for the nation of Israel. People are going to lose everything. The rains is what set the whole economy in place. Many people will die. So that was last week. And now, as we keep reading in this passage, Elijah's on the run. He's on the run from King Ahab and his spiteful wife, Jezebel. We'll talk about that as we move through his story. He's probably on the run from a lot of people. I mean, his prophecy of the fact that it's not going to rain for a long time, this affected everybody. I don't think Elijah was a very popular person right now. And my guess is that everywhere that he went, he must have been asking the question, I mean, who can I trust? Ahab's after me. Jezebel for sure is going to be after him. How do I know who's going to set me up? How do I know, you know, who's going to tell the king where I'm at? Who can I trust? And that really is the big point that I want us to see this morning. And I think it's the same lesson that you and I have to learn ourselves if God's going to powerfully use us as his servants. So the foundational lesson is this, that you can trust God. You can trust God. When we feel as if there is no one else that we can trust God. And I hope, I want you to know this morning to tell you why it's so important that we do, why this is so foundational for everything else in our Christian life that we'll build on it, this foundation of trust. Here's how the text says it. Scenes 1 and 2, I think, are basically saying the same thing. You can trust God's protection. That was last week. Scene 3, you can trust God's direction. Scene 4, you can trust God's provision. And scene 5, you can trust God's wisdom. And I want to talk through those last three and help to form this foundation of what does this trust in God, what's this faith in God look like that's so critical for the foundations of our lives. All right, so scene number 3. Elijah's leaving Cherith. We'll read the text here in a minute. But you can trust God's direction. I want you to pick up in verse 7. Let me just summarize again. Verse 1 talked about Elijah going in right into the king's presence and the prophecy of no rain. Verses 2 and 3, you know, God says to Elijah, you better get out of there. There's going to be trouble coming. I want to send you to this location, the brook Cherith, and I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to feed you. And in the next couple of verses, we find out how God fed Elijah by the brook and then by the ravens. And that happens in those first couple of verses. Verse 7, here's where we're going to pick up. And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering sticks. We'll stop there for a minute, pick it up in a minute. How long Elijah stays at Cherith is not mentioned. Verse 7 says, after a while. I don't know if it's a period of months. I'm sure it was, maybe even a year, maybe more than that. But after a while, the brook dries up. And I kind of wonder what Elijah must have been thinking as the brook slowly begins to, you know, the water stops coming. It starts to dry up. And in this process, we don't have any indication that up until the brook had actually dried, that God had given Elijah any direction. And so here he is, right? I mean, he's slowly watching this thing from the torrent of water that came down this gully to begin with. And then it's a little bit less, and it gets smaller and smaller till there's just a trickle of water, and then there's nothing. And the brook completely dries up. And evidently, from the text, up through that point, God hadn't said anything to him about what was next. He's just watching the resources go away, dwindle down, wondering, how am I going to survive? What's going to happen next? God sent me here, said he's going to provide for me, but now the brook is drying up and God's not saying anything. God's silent. After, verse 7, after the brook is bone dry, then, verse 8 and 9, God clearly directs. But what God says to Elijah, I don't think it made any sense to him. God says, you're supposed to go to Zarephath, and I want you to go and be provided by a widow. She's going to take care of you. And I can't imagine that Elijah must have been thinking, I mean, God, you left me stranded all along, silence from you, when I could see things were becoming more and more dire. I don't hear anything from you. And now finally you speak, but what you send me to is Zarephath. You can look back. I'm not going to read it at chapter 16 and verse 31. But Zarephath is Jezebel's home country, Gentile nation. And the very heart of Baal worship. God, you're going to send me there? I mean, that's right back into the thick of things. And not only that, but he's supposed to go find this widow woman, this someone who would have already been having a hard enough time caring for herself and her son, especially in this time of famine. Yet actually, we don't see any record, at least, of Elijah doubting God. Elijah had learned in this, or was in the process of learning this idea that you can trust God's direction. Talk about that here in a minute. Scene number four, I want to put these two things together and then I'm going to talk about them together. The widow of Zarephath is what happens beginning in verse 10 through verse 16, and we're describing it this way, that you can trust God's provision. You can trust God's direction and you can trust God's provision. So God directed to Zarephath and Elijah obeys and he comes to this Gentile city and he sees this widow gathering sticks for a fire, and as God had directed him, he asks for some water. That's the last part of verse 10. Just think about this for a minute. This is a very significant request. This is a time of famine. There's no water in the land. It's not even like Jesus with the woman at the well of Samaria where he asked for water, where there was water in the well. This is different. There's no water in the land, so it's significant. He asked for water. And the widow goes to get the water, and then as she is going, Elijah goes beyond that, and he asks for some food as well. That's in verse 11. And, you know, we kind of read this in this story, verse 12. I mean, it appears that the woman is pretty shocked about this for a lot of different reasons. Why the prophet, Jewish prophet, is speaking to her, a Gentile woman, why he's asking her for water. He would have known, in fact, we're going to find this in a minute, I mean, my guess is that this is a famished lady. It would have been evident that she was so. Eventually, she's going to say, we're getting ready to prepare our last meal, and then we're going to die. If she's at that point, she and her son are at that point, I'm guessing it would have been clear that she was famished just by looking at her. And Elijah looks and says, hey, could you give me a meal? Verse 13, let's go ahead and read. Let's pick up in verse 12. We'll read that and then through 16. And she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I'm gathering two sticks that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. It's a very somber verse. Very solemn description of how dire the circumstances are. And Elijah said unto her, fear not, go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first and bring it unto me, and after make for thee and for thy son. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail, until the day that the Lord sendeth rain upon the earth. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days, and the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by Elijah. So there's so much in these verses. I want to just talk about these two things, though. You can trust God's direction, and you can trust God's provision. Can I just mention several principles of God's constant direction? These are going to come at you fast, but I want you to have them. Number one, don't be discouraged by changes in your life circumstances. Because God often uses changes in our life circumstances to direct us. Elijah could have been discouraged and quit. I mean, God had sent him. He knew God had sent him to the brook, and now the brook is drying up. He might have questioned, God, why did you send me here in the first place? Elijah could have charted out on his own course. God, you're not speaking. It feels like I got to do something. I'm going to have to get out of here and go and do, you know, my own thing. But Elijah didn't do that. Don't be discouraged by changes in your life circumstances. God's going to use them to direct you. Number two, maybe a balance to number one, it's this: circumstances alone do not prove God's will. Just because God changes your life circumstances does not necessarily mean that he is moving you to a different direction, at least may not be at that time. Elijah waited for God's clear direction. He didn't move until he knew God was speaking. There may be other purposes for your circumstances than just the fact that God might be trying to redirect you. Too often, I think, when things start to look bleak or challenging, when the brook starts to dry up, too often we're too quick to bail out. We assume God must be, you know, changing my course and changing my direction. Yet God has not clearly directed that, and we've just responded too quickly to the changing circumstances and maybe fear in light of them. So circumstances alone do not prove God's will. Number three, God uses a variety of factors to evidence his will. In fact, I try to be careful about saying this. There is no formula for how to determine God's will. I'm always cautious about that. I don't mean that there are not biblical principles. There are definitely biblical principles. But I think sometimes Bible teachers start to kind of say, if you do this, if you do this, if you do this, here's the four things, here's the formula. And as I read the Bible, God directed people in a lot of different ways. His will became evident to people in a lot of different ways. There are principles. We can talk about those. We're not going to do it this morning. But God uses a variety of factors to evidence his will. And I think in this situation with Elijah, we see that. Number four, I do know this. God is never trying to fool you. God is not trying to trick you. If you are legitimately seeking God's will and God's direction, he will show it to you. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 ought to be planted in your mind in this area of God's will and God's direction for your life. Come back to it over and over again because it's a promise. If you'll trust in the Lord, if you won't lean on your understanding, if you'll acknowledge him in all things, he will direct your path. God is not trying to fool you. God's not out there saying, here's a Christian, Lord, I really want to do your will. I think that this is what you want me to go, and I'm going to pursue it. Change my course if you want to. God's not up there going, I tricked you. He's not like that. He wants to demonstrate. He wants to show you his direction for your life. He's not trying to fool you. And the last thing is this, God's will sometimes removes you from your comfort zone. Again, this is true for Elijah. I mean, we could talk about this the whole time, these five things, but sometimes God's will removes you from your comfort zone. He went from safety at the brook, seclusion, up in really the middle of the lion's den in Zarephath. Faith and I have been married for 30 years this past December. I know that Faith does not look old enough to be married for 30 years. Thank you for saying that. We were like 10 when we got married, something like that. I've said this for a long time. I've told people that in those years, God has been so good to us, and he's blessed us with three amazing children, five total. I actually have said that a long time. That's not true. It's not true. God gave us five wonderful kids, and now God's blessed us with a daughter-in-law, an amazing daughter-in-law, and a little granddaughter. So God's blessed us so much in these 30 years. We are convinced that the two greatest lessons that God has been teaching us in 30 years of together is these two things. We can trust God's provision, and we can trust God's direction. I wish I had time to tell you this morning of the incredible ways that God has proved and directed us over these years. I mean, we could talk about dozens of specific illustrations and stories of how God has proved these things to us year after year after year. I'm sure that you would have similar stories. We could just stop and spend the rest of the service kind of giving testimonies of, for each of us, how God has directed us. It might be a good thing to do that. I want to tell you two stories, illustrations for us personally that I hope will be an encouragement to you about God's direction and God's provision. I graduated from seminary when I was 25 years old. Faith and I had been married a couple of years by that time. And trained for ministry, felt called to pastoral ministry. And we felt like God was leading us to stay there in that place, in that church. We were plugged in, involved. I was coaching, athletic director in a school. And then Faith and I together were leading a college ministry, a campus ministry on the University of Minnesota campus. So very, very involved in that ministry. And so we spent the next 3 years continuing to stay faithful and loving every bit of what God had called us to in that area. But we knew that God had called us to pastoral ministry. That was a heavy burden, passion, direction in our lives. And so 3 years after seminary, along with some counsel of godly people and mentors in our life, we felt like this might be the time that God was going to lead us out into pastoral ministry. And so we kind of started to cut some ties. We didn't sign a contract for the following year. It was in January, February, so we didn't sign the next contract. And we started kind of putting out some feelers about, you know, where God was going to lead us, what the next steps would be for direction. And I don't know exactly, well, I do know exactly what I expected. I just thought that, you know, right away we'd have a number of opportunities that would come our way. You know, some very specific places. We'd been hearing all along how desperate the need was for pastors and ministry people. And in fact, we'd received, when we left college, we had a number of offers to come join some pastoral staffs that we said no to, went to seminary. And so we just thought now we're, you know, a few years more mature and better prepared. You know, God was going to open up some doors. And so it just surprised us. I guess I shouldn't have, but we didn't hear anything. We knew we weren't going to come back, and we kind of went through that spring. We just didn't hear anything from anybody. We kind of put out some feelers. We were just waiting for God to direct us, and just nothing. In fact, you know, I kind of remember teasing at that time, we really felt like Abraham, that God had called us to go out, but we didn't, not knowing whither we went. I mean, that was sort of the idea. And over time, I look back on it now, and it's just such, you know, in the big scheme of life, you look back and you think it was just a very short period of time. I don't know why it was so overwhelming. Now it seems silly, but at the time, it was pretty frightening for us. We wanted to serve God. We were ready to go anywhere that God called us to, and it's just like silence, radio silence, nothing. And it went for a few months, and I remember having a conversation with my dad a few months into it. We're coming close to the summer when now we don't have jobs and we got to figure out what the next step is. And my dad, you know, counseling me that, you know, God hasn't directed. Maybe what you ought to do is connect with an experienced pastor, maybe somebody's planning a church, and just go serve alongside. And I mean, we're good for that. We're all in, whatever God wanted us to do. And so actually we had a contact with a pastor, an experienced pastor that was starting a church in Tucson, Arizona. And we thought, well, you know, if this is what God wants us to do, we'll go get some experience in church planning. And so they actually invited us to come down. Faith and I went down to visit in Arizona, visit the church. We loved it. That was fine. We're going to, you know, pull up stakes, move down there, get jobs, serve in the church. You know, that would have been no problem for us. And so that's what we just felt like. God hadn't opened doors. This is what he was going to do. And so we came back from that little survey trip and got back home. We've been praying about it. We felt like, okay, God, this is what you want us to do. We reserved a truck. I don't know, maybe as a trailer. I don't remember. Something to move, whatever we had to move from Minnesota to Arizona. And I'll never forget this. I don't want to forget this. About a week after we got back, I got a phone call. It was the pastor of the church in Arizona, the church plant in Arizona. And, you know, we talked on the phone, and very quickly he said, I want to be clear about this. We want you to come. We really feel like we need you. But since you've left, there's this little piece. To us, it was kind of a big piece that we had talked about when you were there, and it doesn't look like that's going to work out. And I don't know how to exactly explain this, but when he said that, I knew, I just knew as clear as I knew my name, I knew that God was answering the prayer that we'd been asking him. God, if this is not what you want us to do, please close this door. We don't want to go anywhere. We're willing to go anywhere, but we don't want to go anywhere you have not called us to. And I knew it when he said that. They were still asking us to come, but I knew that this was God closing the door. I hung up the phone, called Faith right away. She wasn't at home. I called her, and I said, Faith, I don't think God wants us to go to Tucson. I think God's closing the door. And I don't remember what that conversation was. It was short, and then I hung up, but I remember this weight of hanging up from those two back-to-back phone calls going, now what? This is the honest truth. I hung up the phone call. I walked across our kitchen. I know where I was standing when I made those two phone calls. I walked across our kitchen, across our living room, out our front door, out our porch, to the mailbox 30 seconds afterwards. And I opened the mailbox, and there were two letters from two churches saying, Gary Walton, would you consider talking with us about pastoring this church? One of them, eventually, Moorhead, Minnesota, God called us to that ministry. And I'm telling you guys, you can call it a coincidence. And if it was just one letter, I could maybe come get with you on that. We had not received anything from anybody. Radio silence for 5 months. And I'm telling you, you'll never convince Faith or I of anything different than this. It was God who put those two letters in that mailbox on that day that we picked up on that moment after that phone call. And it was God telling us, you guys can trust me. I'm going to direct your path. I'll never forget that. We took the one letter, the church in Moorhead, and we've actually had for many years, put it in a frame. It's hung on our wall. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about memorials? That letter in our family is a memorial to the fact of God's direction. He will direct our paths. Can I tell you the harvest story? There's dozens of God's directions stories in between that one and this one, but I love this one in the same way. We spent 5 years prior to coming here at Bibles International, a ministry that we love serving in that ministry. When we came to BI, there were some specific needs that we felt like God had prepared us to help them with at the time, but we knew that God was in the process of heading us back towards pastoral ministry. Some of you that were in those conversations, this is familiar to you. Most of you, I think I've told this story before when we came. So we knew that God was heading us back to pastoral ministry, but we felt like God was directing us for a period of time. And so we made a commitment to BI that we would be there for 3 years. And then after that, we felt like God was going to move us to pastoral ministry. And so at about the three-year mark, we'd actually had a couple of churches contact us during that time. And at about the three-year mark, a church asked us to come and spend some time with them. And we did. We spent a weekend together. They were looking for a pastor. It was kind of home territory for us, very comfortable. In our minds, an awesome opportunity. And I think all systems were go. And we left that place, went back to Grand Rapids, and within the next couple of days, some pretty significant things happened at Bibles International. And I tell you this, immediately we knew that God was closing that door. Now was not the time. We could not leave what was happening at Bibles International. We needed to stay there. God was calling us to stay there. And so I remember that difficult phone call, calling the church back and some leaders and saying, God is calling us to be here. I don't know if it's going to be 9 more months or a year, but God's calling us. We know that we have to stay here. And so that was at the three-year mark. For the next 2 years, I'm always a little funny about how to say this because I don't want it to come out wrong, but I don't know that I can tell you this story without telling you this, so just accept it for what it is. Over the next 2 years, Faith and I said no to more than 30 churches and ministries that contacted us during that time to ask if we'd be interested. More than 30. I don't think that's about us. I think it's about the desperate need for leaders.
but more than 30. Some of them we knew right away after the phone call. Some of them were, you know, longer contacts and some visits where we just knew this was not. And that's a lot of contacts. That's a lot of decisions that each one for us was a no. It was a no. And along that way, you know, Faith said a couple times, she was like, "Gary, what are you waiting for?" And you ask her, here's what I said each time. "I don't know, but I know that's not it. Because of these reasons." And each time it was different reasons. "I don't know, but I know that's not where God's calling us right now." I remember she's like, "This is, if you're waiting for the perfect church, it's not out there." And I said, "No, I'm not, I don't think we're waiting for the perfect church. I don't think, but very specifically, I don't know why God, in our hearts, my heart particularly, why God keeps saying no, but God's saying no. I know that's not the place." When Pastor Ken, I don't remember Pastor Ken, I can't see up there, whether it was a phone call or an email, I don't remember what the first contact was, but you know, when Harvest Baptist Church in Guam contacted us in January, February of 2018, after 30 other contacts, I remember thinking, you know, kind of laughing, like, I can think of 50 more people more qualified to leave that church than me, right, when that first contact came. And not only that, but who wants to follow Marty Heron? He's like the coolest guy in the world, in my mind, really. Man, anybody coming after him is going to feel like a weirdo, right? I mean, that's how much respect I have for Pastor Heron. And but as God began to kind of clarify things in his will, and we were able to look back and see the very, for us at least, the very specific things that God had been doing in our lives over those last really 10 years that we felt preparing us for this time. But I would tell you guys this. There's no way we wait through the 30 invitations unless along the path we knew this. God said, "You can trust me. I will direct your path, and I'm going to make it clear to you," right? If that hadn't been taught to us over and over again from that first, you know, that first monumental thing in our lives through that time, then I don't know how it changes. We continue to learn that we can trust God's direction, and you can. He's not interested in deceiving us. He's not trying to trick you. We may not always understand his direction at the time, but his direction is always right. Let me talk to you just for a minute about this. So there's somebody here, I'm sure, that might be asking this question. What if I make or made a wrong turn? I mean, what about that? I know that you're saying that you can trust God's direction, but what if I got off course along the way? We don't use GPS much here on Guam. I mean, if you try it, I have tried. It sends you out in the boonies, and then you get stuck on a dead end, right? So we don't use a lot of GPS here. But you know when you're getting directions from a GPS and you make a wrong turn, right? You've experienced that. It says, make a U-turn. And it keeps saying it, make a U-turn. All right, it says recalculating, right? Recalculating. Some way it tells us. I was traveling a lot before coming to Harvest, really 5 years of traveling. And when I first started traveling, my assistant would give me a folder of Google directions, maps, and you know, step-by-step directions that I'd go get off the plane and I'd have to start looking through this folder. When GPS became, you know, that was awesome. Get off the plane, get in the rental car, punch in where I'm going, and the GPS just brings you. But I've had my share of times when you're on the interstate not knowing where you're going, and it's saying, you know, take the next right turn, and the next turns come up real quick, right? Two or three in a row, and depending on if you take the right one or the wrong one, they're going to send you in opposite directions. You've experienced that, right?
They happen fast. You think it's this one. It's actually the next one. You're off on the wrong one. You're going the wrong direction. And the GPS is telling you, right? Take the next right turn. Or whatever the lady's voice is. I can't do it. Take the next right turn. Sometimes you don't know which right turn it is. And what if I take the wrong next right turn? What if I do it again? And that's what happened to a lot of people here, right? You took a wrong life turn. And then for some of us, then on top of that, we capitalized and we took another wrong life turn on top of the wrong one that we made first of all. Listen, maybe you did get off on the wrong one. Listen to me. My God is powerful enough and He is wise enough to get you back on track. When you take a wrong turn, your GPS is not overwhelmed. It just keeps telling you how to get back on the right track. One wrong turn will not keep you off God's path. Some of you have had more scenic routes than 10 people put together. Listen, our good God has a way of bringing good things even out of wrong turns. That's how good He is. You say, man, I should have never have dated him. No, you shouldn't have. The fact that his middle name is, you know, Satan probably should have given you a hint about that. No, you shouldn't have, but now you know what a godly man looks like. I shouldn't have trusted that person. I mean, I got burned so bad. I got hurt so bad. No, you shouldn't have. But now you're learning how to forgive. I shouldn't have made, you know, that decision. It was such a big mistake. It has cost me so much, and I've hurt so bad because of that decision that I made. And I'd say, no, you shouldn't have made that decision. But now you understand God's grace. God is good enough to work through our wrong turns. When you make a wrong turn, the GPS doesn't freak out and say, listen, man, you missed it. You'll never get there now. Can you imagine that? You'll never get there now. It doesn't say that. No, it just says recalculating. You don't need to give up. You don't need to go home. God is at least as good as GPS. This is many of our life stories. One guy gave his testimony this way. He said, wrong friends, wrong environment, wrong entertainment, wrong girls, became the wrong guy, ended up in the wrong places, a lot of wrong turns. But all of those wrong turns led me to seek the right person whose name was Jesus, who forgave my sins, who made me new, transformed my heart, who changed the direction of my life. Oh, there was a scenic detour, but it didn't stop me from getting to the destination. Listen, if there's anybody here who's messed up, is there anybody here that's partied too hard, that has regrets from choices that you've made, it does not have to be fatal. It is not the end of the story. In fact, I'd even tell you that in God's goodness, it doesn't have to even be a waste. It was a wrong turn, but God wants to use that wrong turn in His divine ways for your good and for your future. You can trust God's direction. You can trust God's provision. I wish I could talk a little bit more about that. Can I just say this last thing? Scene 5, Elijah and the widow's son. I can't even read the text out of time, but you can trust God's wisdom, verses 17 through 24. The widow's son gets sick, confused. She questions Elijah. Verse 20, Elijah questions God. I think that you read that there. He calls out to God for this miracle of life, and God answers, and he
and he raises the son from the dead. And I just want to tell you this last piece. The ultimate test of our trust in God is whether we trust his wisdom. Listen, it's a step of faith to trust God to protect us. It is a step of faith to trust God to direct us and direct our lives. It is a step of faith to trust God to provide for us and to meet our needs. But the ultimate test comes when things happen that we don't understand. When accidents happen to young children, when deaths take place in our families, when catastrophes take place in our lives, when problems occur in our homes, it's one thing to quote Romans 8:28 when things are going good. But when things happen that we don't expect and things happen that we don't understand, it becomes more difficult to say then that we know that all things work together for good to them that love God. This chapter concludes with the key verse. Verse 24, and the woman said to Elijah, now by this, by what? Well, this was the healing, the restoration of her son. But by this I know that thou art a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in thy mouth is truth. I'm convinced that the foundation for the outpouring of God's power in Elijah's life was laid right here in these initial stages of Elijah's ministry. It was during this time, this season, that Elijah learned that he could trust God. We asked the question last week, I mean, have you seen the power of God lately? Have you experienced God's power in your life? It's the same question that Elisha asked at the banks of the Jordan. And can I just propose it to you again today, as I'll continue to do throughout this series? God desires to evidence that same power in your life and in my life. And the first step is laying this foundation for powerful ministry. And I think it starts in this foundation of, will we trust God? When things are struggling, when things are hard, when we don't know the future, when we can't even see the next step, will we trust God? This is what the Bible calls faith. And Hebrews says that without faith, it is impossible to please Him.